Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. On with me today is my co-producer, Joe Caruso. Joe, how are you today?
It's a fantastic day in Maryland, sunny blue skies, and supposed to be 66 degrees.
Well, we've got a little bit of warm spell here in South Texas, 80 degrees. And just like franchising, things are warming up as we're closing in on the end of the first quarter. Hopefully everybody is already one-sixth towards their goals, but I'm sure that's not the case in many occasions. Joe, last week we had Nancy Weingartner on from Franchise Times. Great guest, third time on the show. Certainly gave us some great insight and perspective on international trade missions.
Oh, Nancy did a terrific job. I've never been on a trade mission. I learned a lot. We had opportunity to talk a lot about international franchising strategies and some of the perils and pitfalls of going international, and it was a great show.
Yeah, and certainly international is on a lot of people's mind, and next week you have Catherine Monson lined up from Fast Signs talking about their recent foray into international franchising. So that should be good. And who do we have after Catherine?
Well, following on Catherine's first time on Franchise Today, next week on the 8th, we'll have an encore performance of Franchise Today with Bob Colm, and he'll be talking about SBA 7A loans and 504 programs and what's happening in the lending industry and access to credit for franchisees, and of course it's an important topic for franchisors. Then we'll be moving in, keeping with a theme, with Ron Feldman, and he'll be talking about franchise finance on the 22nd of March. Then we've got a recurring guest with Brad Fishman, and he'll be a recap of the Franchise Unconference, which should be wrapping up in Park City, Utah. Then we'll have a representative from the IFA to talk about the second Small Business Lending Summit that will be happening on April 17th in Washington, D.C., that's sponsored by the IFA and the National Restaurant Association. That show's on April 5th. And then we launch into our ever-popular Franchise Legal Series from the 12th until the 24th, and we've got 7 parts this year, and this will be our third annual Franchise Legal Series.
Yeah, and that'll be April 12th to May 24th as we wrap up with the IFA Legal Symposium recap, and we'll have an announcement as to the participants in the Legal Series next week. We're close to finalizing topics as well as juggling, of course, which are very busy legal schedules. But I think this year it's just going to be phenomenal. And we've just been having a great run with Franchise Today. We didn't even have an opportunity to replay leading up to the third annual legal series last year's, which we've done in the past. But, of course, those are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Joe, I wanted to shout out to the listeners and let them know to look at Franchise Essentials blog site at fmdpro.com and take a look at the article I posted the other night about, are you confused by franchise terminology? Seems like we've gotten some traction in the various LinkedIn groups on that, and a little bit of tongue-in-cheek on the different terminology used in franchising.
Well, I think everybody agrees that people in franchising can't agree on the terminology.
That's for sure, and that's at fmdpro.com. Today, we have a great guest, well-known franchise veteran, Lonnie Helgerson of the Helgerson Franchise Group, and we'll let Lonnie talk about some of the recent endeavors that he's been involved in as well as some of the things in the past. But if anybody's been around the IFA for quite some time. I'm sure you've run into Lonnie's smiling face walking the exhibit hall or at different franchise events. So I think we need to lead right into that. Lonnie, welcome to Franchise Today.
Hey, Paul. Appreciate it. Excited to be here. And much like you in Texas, we're feeling a little love of weather over here in Southwest Florida as well. Looking to be about the mid-80s today. So we're peeling into that springtime weather already.
Well, I think if I had my choice, I would rather be sitting on Siesta Key in Sarasota than in the Woodlands, Texas. No offense to the Woodlands, but there's nothing like Sarasota.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I'll take it one step further. I'd rather be sitting on my boat looking at Siesta Key from out in the water catching me some grouper.
There you go, Joe. Did you hear that? Lonnie's got a boat, road trip.
I do like grouper, and I noticed that both of you guys had to one-up me on the weather. I mean, 66 degrees in Maryland, sitting up overlooking the Chesapeake Bay and the Susquehanna Rivers is really, really good. But, of course, you're in Texas, and Lonnie, you're in Florida, and how do I compete in March?
Yeah, well, you can't compete. We're waiting for you to get hit for that nice spring snowfall and watching you dig out. Hey, Lonnie, Franchise Times current issue is out, and you have an article in there. You want to give us a little bit of a headway into that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I've got an article in there about crowdfunding. As some of you know, I used it to fund my book, Five Pennies, which we're going to talk about a little later. But before I get into that, I want to give a shout-out to a good friend of mine, Mark Johnson from Granite Transformations, who's on the cover of Franchise Times this month. Outstanding job, Mark. But if you're listening, dude, you're killing me. Nobody's going to read my article because they're going to get scared away from the magazine with your picture on it. So you got to give me a break. So hopefully he's listening. He's a good guy and he deserves it, and it's a great concept. Great company.
That sounds great. I definitely look forward to receiving Franchise Today in my mailbox. Franchise Times in my mailbox. I'd love for Franchise Today to be in my mailbox. Anyway, Lonnie, as we all know in franchising, you've been around franchising a long time, from lodging, technology, and retail for over 20 years. How did you get started in franchising?
Well, that's a good question. I actually got started with a company called Super 8 Motels. Interesting enough, we're getting into the veteran side of things. I'm an Army veteran. And I had went back from active duty in the U.S. Army to the South Dakota National Guard to work on my commission as an officer. And while I was going to school and doing all of that, a buddy of mine that was also in ROTC with me happened to ask me if I was interested in making some extra money. And, of course, going to school, definitely at the top of your mind making extra money. So I said, sure. I ended up working for Super 8 Motels in their aviation department. And for those on the listening in, South Dakota is a fairly remote state, and to grow a chain of that size and magnitude, we had to use quite a bit of our own aircraft. And I grew through the company pretty quickly, and one day we came back and we had a Learjet, and we had a bunch of other corporate aircraft, and we were putting the Learjet back in the hangar, and Ron Rivett, one of the founders of Super 8 Motels, was walking back to the hangar, and I yelled at him, and he turned around, and I had a camera with me, and I snapped his picture. And at that moment, I decided that this guy had a successful insurance agency. He was had been a banker in his previous life, but now was the owner, literally, of the largest economy lodging chain in the world at that time. And it was at that precise moment I decided that I was going to start a franchise chain. I'd grown up very entrepreneurial in a family, was very entrepreneurial, owned many businesses. So it wasn't new to me, but it was a defining moment for me. And it was shortly thereafter, a couple of years later, I launched my first brand called Computer Doctor. And I ended up getting out of the military. My first choice was going back into the military as an officer and retiring in the military. But that moment in time was a a moment that changed the direction of my life. And I still have that picture hanging in my office about 4 feet from me right now that I look at quite frequently to remember that and to remember that my bucket list isn't quite finished yet. So that's how I got started in franchising.
Well, franchising's gain, the military's loss for sure, although I think it would have been neat to see General Helgerson on CNN, but anyway, we all take different paths.
It's a scary thought.
Besides, what have been some of the franchise concepts beyond the ones you've just mentioned that you've developed throughout your career?
Well, starting with Super 8 Motels, and from there I left and started a chain called Computer Doctor, which was a chain of retail service centers that primarily provided computer break fix and services to the consumers, but also provided retail areas. And at the time, Computer Renaissance, either one of you guys remember that chain, and there's still some of those stores out there, were the first player into the technology space. We came in with Computer Doctor as the first player in the services space and technology, and shortly had a large number of competitors follow us into that area. And through that, we ultimately ended up creating another brand called Expatech Technology Services, which was a business-to-business services company that focused on larger, what we would call SMBs, or small and medium business. And we had contracts with Accenture and IBM Global Services and all kinds of things. It grew very rapidly and so forth. And at the same time, we started a third brand that was spaced in the Internet services side, which was starting to grow pretty rapidly at the time. I sold that company to my partners in 2005 and moved to Florida and started doing some consulting and some other types of things, and ultimately ended up running a chain called Identikid Services of America based out of St. Petersburg, which I was with for a number of years, and we had a very good run with that brand, and they're still doing well. Identikid has got probably, I think, 240 or 50 locations and been around for over 25 years, very strong brand and so forth. But recently, about 2 years ago, I was working with my partner, Drew Myers, with the concept of creating something to address the veteran space. And we ended up creating a company called Veteran Franchise Centers, which is positioned very much like FranNet in a way that it is franchised and helps veterans find franchise opportunities. And that was really started as an offshoot of VetFran, which we'll touch on a little bit later. But that company was designed to help put more veterans into franchising and has done very well at that. I recently exited that company and to focus on some other things that I'm doing with Helgerson Franchise Group, so I guess at the end of the day, when you look back on it, I've done now about six or seven startup franchise brands, and been with some biggies along the way as well. So, been a long career. Enjoy it. We'll continue to do it as long as I can breathe there.
Well, certainly walking around the franchise events, I would never pick you out of the crowd as being a techno geek.
Well, there's something else you might not know about me, but I was also the guy that helped get the Geek Squad started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. While we had Computer Doctor, we had a national program with Walmart Supercenters to do a 100-store test with them. At the time, they were just rolling out the Supercenter format, and we were looking to do a real estate play by putting our service centers in those super centers. And during that time, I was I made an acquaintance with the folks at Best Buy, Dick Schultz, the founder, and a number of the executives there. And I started talking to them about taking a losing piece of their business, which was the technology services at the time, was a complete expense for them. And I said, my idea was to turn that into a real estate play and put a service center in there that would pay Best Buy a rent on a monthly basis, and in turn create a profitable center that would service, the systems that Best Buy sells and so forth. And We went back and forth for a long, it was almost probably a year on that. We were close to pulling the trigger. And then, because we were going to test this out in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities area with a number of Best Buy stores. And my goal was to put franchisees in them because franchise owners really take care of their location. They have a passion for that business, unlike a manager does. And I was felt very strongly that a franchisee would operate very well and represent both Best Buy and Computer Doctor in that situation. Their push was they wanted us to do it corporately. And by this time, our Walmart test didn't work out exactly the way that we wanted it to, and so we declined, and it was ended up being a deal killer. And 8 months later, they brought in the Geek Squad, which was a small Minneapolis company at the time, to do the test, and the rest is history. So
wow. Wow.
And that's the way the cookie crumbles.
I knew that. You mentioned Helgeson Franchise Group. Tell us briefly about that.
That's a company that I formed after I moved to Florida as a kind of a catch-all for me if I was going to do some consulting, which I started doing quite a bit of when I first moved down here. Because at the time, I was an unemployed nut and didn't have a business to run. So after about 6 or 7 months of driving my wife crazy, she threw me out of the house, and I went to an IFA meeting. And that's where I started doing some consulting with people and ultimately met the folks at Identikid to run their company. And I started with them as a consultant for about 6 or 8 months before I took over as the CEO of the company. But Helgeson Franchise Group has now morphed into a platform company that owns and operates franchise brands. Right now we're incubating Island Time Treasures, which is a new brand that we're getting ready to launch. And as well, I still provide some consulting services to companies on various levels, whether it be recruiting or franchisee relationships and, you know, that kind of thing. So go through some of that. So overall, Helgeson Franchise Group is we're seeking acquisitions. Right now, we're looking out there for, you know, systems that might be a good fit for us, preferably in the services sector or the child sector, and so that's the path that we're going down right now.
Well, that's very interesting, Joe. Do you have any question regarding Helgeson? I know you probably perked up your ears when you heard child sector.
Well, you know, I have one comment. You know, Lonnie talked about have being kind of a captain without out of ship after leaving his company, and I have heard that a remedy for that, a lot of executives that sell their companies and have nothing to do, their wives make them join AA, even if they don't have a drinking problem, and it tends to be very helpful because they get into that 12-step process, and it gives them something to do other than hang around the house.
I couldn't agree with you more because, I find, you know, self-doubt is the biggest killer of success, in my opinion. And when you go from having, you know, 300, 400, 500 emails a day and, you know, 25 people or more, 50 people reporting to you and all of that goes with that, to basically zero within a matter of a week or less, it's a big adjustment for people. And, you know, especially the bigger you get, the bigger the adjustment, right?
Oh, certainly.
Well, certainly the emails can stop when you're sitting on the boat and basking in the sun. And you mentioned Island Time Treasures. Let's talk real quick about that before we get into the main topic of today's show.
Sure. Island Time Treasures provides what we call sand art activities for parents, children, and adults. We primarily operate in two capacities, one on the retail side, non-store retail, and the other through schools. And what we do is we go into schools and we have a program that helps teach children both a little bit of art and a little bit of science by creating their own picture frame, school picture frames. And we have a variety of types that we do, and basically we come in there with a sandbox and we make an impression into the sand with a mold that we've designed to for our picture frames, and then the children decorate it with what we call island bling. It could be seashells, sea glass, buttons, and all kinds of different things. Then we have a proprietary mixture of plaster that we call island mud that we pour on top of that and fill that mold in with. And in about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes, that plaster is dry and is set up. And we're able to take it out of the sand and clean it up and put the finishing details on there, putting some clear coat and some glitter and that type of thing. And they have a really neat product that they can take home and give the grandma or the parents and that type of thing. As well, we also donate 20% of the proceeds that we get from a school back to the school in a fundraising effort. So it's been very well received. My wife's been operating a location down here that we started for a couple months, and she's just smoking busy. We have another location opening up in Sarasota County here in the next month or two, and it's going very, very well. It's very proprietary. It's very different, and usually hear from people who've never seen anything like that before, and it's a blast. It's an absolute blast working with all the kids and having a good time.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, certainly the term franpreneur definitely suits you very well, and as we talk about the word Fran, we have to talk about Vet Fran, mm-hmm. and without a doubt, IFA Vet Fran has been a program that's been near and dear to you. You're a two-term chairman of the VetFran committee, a big proponent of military service veterans and franchising. And for everybody that was at the IFA convention a couple of weeks ago in Orlando, knows that there was a lot of emphasis and focus on veterans and franchising. So Lonnie, take us back to the beginning. What was the genesis for the VetFran program?
VetFran got its start by, you know, Don Dwyer, who's the founder of the Dwyer Group. Don started the program actually back right after Desert Storm, and it was an initiative they put together, and it didn't gain a lot of traction. Right after 9/11, 2001, his daughter Dina Dwyer Owens, who many of you know, resurrected the program through the IFA, and it really gained a lot of traction. And I was originally one of the first franchise companies that joined the program with Expatech Technology Services. And we actually sold the very first veteran into VetFran in, I believe it was in early 2002. We were the very first ones. We got a lot of press off of it, as you can imagine. And that guy is still in business in Hawaii, no less. We saved him so much money on his fee, he was literally able to buy two more locations with it and done very well with it. But so I've been involved with it since its genesis and since it started. It must have been right around 2007 that the IFA wanted to form a committee and around it and formalize it a little bit, and they tasked Michael Side with that to create a committee. And at that time, because I was involved with it and was making it work so well for us, they asked me to participate on it. And so it was myself and Michael and a bunch of others that met, you know, as an IFA committee does, and worked to bring VetFran to the future. I became his vice chair. And then it must have been about 2008 or so that I took over as chair of the program and ran it, you know, for the last few years. Mary Thompson is now the chair of it, who was my vice chair, who's doing an unbelievable job. Mary, I'm patting you on the back again. She's taken the program and gone even greater heights with it. It's not been for our initiative. It's been because of the people that are on that committee. It's because of the staff at the IFA and the franchisors that get behind the program that made it the success that it is today. We only help bring people together and, you know, and foster ideas. It's the teamwork that really made it what it is. It's just a fantastic program and I'm very passionate about it, as you can tell.
And it's just an absolutely great program. It seems like it's gaining momentum again. I know Dina Dwyer Owens was on the show a few weeks ago following her run on CBS Undercover Boss. Got to see Dina in Orlando at the IFA convention, which, of course, was always great to see her. And of course, just seeing military personnel walking around the IFA convention and the big reception and the big part of the exhibit hall dedicated to veterans and franchising really, really felt very good to see. How big is the VetFran market, especially given the fact that we're winding down U.S. involvement in both Iraq and Afghanistan?
Exactly, and that's probably one of the things that I'll talk about, and you know, when we dispel a few myths or thoughts about the program, is most people quickly gravitate towards Afghanistan or Iraq or other things of recent times, but in fact. I think there's probably, the estimate is right around 20 million veterans, 20 to 25 million veterans in the country, all the way back from, you know, maybe a couple, few handfuls of World War II survivors, or it was more than that, actually, but, you know, to Vietnam, Korea, and all the way up here. So you're dealing with a fairly large pool of people. The good news, as I tell people, is you know exactly who you're looking for. You know, on franchise recruiting, you're out there casting a very wide net looking for somebody that hits a financial profile and the other qualifications. And here you know exactly who you're looking for. You're marketing to veterans. And that's an easy one to target because of that. But it's a niche pool, and it's a pool of talent unlike any others that are out there for many reasons. Veterans are great leaders. They're great followers. They have perseverance like none other. You know, failure is not an option to a veteran. They're not afraid to ask for help if they're struggling or need help with a project. And overall, very good at following a system. That's, you know, the military teaches us to be part of a team and to work within a system and the cohesiveness of the unit and, you know, you're dedicated to the mission and all that. Veterans bring those same that same culture and those same traits over to franchise ownership and flourish in it because of it and do quite well.
So with that in mind, and you touched upon, you know, common missteps and misconceptions, what are some of them?
Well, some of them, to begin with, is what I hear more often than not, I'll just throw out there, is the first one that comes to my mind is veterans don't have any money. Well, that could be said about the public in general, right? Nobody has any money now because of the economy. That's a misnomer because it depends on who you're looking for. Yes, the vast majority of people that are getting out of the military, past and present, are enlisted personnel. And those folks usually in for a 2-4 year hitch, whatever their time frame is, and don't come out with an incredible amount of cash or investment. Primarily, many of them use it to go to school and get a better education and look to go back into the corporate world. On the flip side, you have a large number of them that become officers or senior NCOs, non-commissioned officers, and that type of thing, who stay in for a period of time and amass assets just like anyone else does that's working a corporate job. And those folks are no different than anyone else. They're looking to leverage what they have. They're looking to better their lives. They're looking to create something for their families, depending on what their motivation is. They want to pass it down or what have you. So it's not a true statement that veterans don't have money. It's they do, and they and those that have it do very well with it. So that's one thing I want to clear up. The other is that I hear more often from franchisors, particularly, is that veterans are good to go after because they get government grants to open a business. That's absolutely not true. There is no such thing as government grants or VA loans for veterans to open a business. Unfortunately, they don't have, or we as veterans, speaking of myself, don't have much more opportunities or available resources to us than the average person on the street. There is the Patriot Express loan through the SBA. However, it doesn't really give you that much better benefit than a traditional SBA loan does, and it's highly unused. The other thing that a veteran does have, and quite a few franchisors or other people are not aware of it, is something called Thrift Savings Plan, and or a TSP. The TSP has been around for a while and is very much like a 401k. And if you have exited the military, that TSP can be applied in a business rollover just like a 401k rollover. So there are some funds available to a veteran, but they have to be discharged from the military or the government because government workers have that same, at least some of them do, same type of investment tools available to them. So that's a couple of what I would call urban myths there that I'd like to point out.
Well, myth or not, one of the things that I've heard, and I think I've saw it on TV, and I know there was some buzz about it at the IFA convention about this talk about the GI Bill, and their talk, at least this is what I heard, that's what I want to understand if it's a myth or not, that the GI Bill will be able to be used, or they're talking about being able to use it to get into business and not just for education. Is that a myth or not?
That is a fact. That is being discussed and being taken a look at. But on the flip side of that, you certainly must understand how difficult getting something like that modified will be, particularly
I can imagine.
The political climate that we're dealing with. And right now we're in election, so we're not going to get anything done until that election's over. And then it's going to take time for all of that to ramp back up again. But there is some talk of that, that there might be some dollars that could be applied through the education side of that. So, for example, and this is my understanding, too. So if anybody listens to this and knows differently, please let me know. But my understanding is that the training program, as a franchisor puts out there, is what's being considered to be applicable in that instance. So whatever that amount, and one of the challenges with this is, as you guys know, every franchisor or dealer network or whatever you have out there are different in their training, right? Some are 2 days, some are on site, some are in, you know, they're different, and every time you go, every brand has a different training thing. So coming up with a dollar amount that is right in that is going to be challenging, and how that gets applied and all that type of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds, Paul.
Yeah, it will be interesting. This is Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto, co-producer Joe Caruso, and our guest today is Lonnie Helgerson. And this is Franchise Today on Block Talk Radio. Lonnie, under your VetFran committee leadership, what were some of the highlights and innovations that came out of that?
I'd have to say that you know, the highlight of my term while I was with VetFran, and I'm still on the VetFran committee. I've not been put out to pasture, and every time I try to remove myself from something, I get pulled back. Mary won't let me go. I know she's going to listen to this, so she always pulls me up to the table, literally, as we did at the last committee meeting. She'll get that joke. One of the things that we did, Paul, was we needed to really bring the committee into something more formal. We had been a fairly loose-knit committee. And so the first thing that we did is, and I say we, and that was Mary and I and our committee members. And Mary and I talked about this a long time, and I had two goals. One of them is, or three goals. One of them is I wanted to get some housekeeping in place to get a foundation, things like a succession plan for leadership on a committee. I wanted to get formal bylaws in place, and I wanted to build that foundation, that operating foundation. The second thing that I wanted to do with it was to get a strategic plan done. And so working through the committee members, there was a large number of them that did an outstanding job. We put together a strategic expansion plan for VetFran that aligned with the IFA's overall strategic plan. And so we started promoting that. And one of the things on there was to move the VetFran program under the IFA's under the educational foundation. And if we and the reason why is we could then turn VetFran program into a nonprofit, giving some tax advantages to those that donate to it, and making it much more attractive to people, and also afforded the program protection under the Board of Education, rather than the foundation, as and gave us a seat at the IFA board, and that was very important. And we accomplished those three things while we were while I was chair, and really positioned it for where we took it today. So we got. Those are the highlights of what we accomplished as I was chair.
Well, certainly some very good highlights. Joe, yesterday you and I were talking about Patriot Express. Did you have any question for Lonnie with respect to that or anything else up to this point?
Lonnie, the Patriot Express thing, there was a lot of hullabaloo when that first came out. Why has that financing program been such a lackluster for, in terms of usage? Why aren't people taking advantage of it?
You know, I think it's because it really doesn't do the veteran much good. You know, it gives them some breaks on certain things, but it's they still got to go through the same hoops that they would on a traditional SBA loan. I think some of the if there's some myth around that concerning veterans, is it's kind of like a one pager SBA loan, and it's not. And as they find out that they have to have a relationship with a bank, and they have to go through a bank to originate that loan, and they start getting that runaround just like anybody else, they're not going to do it. And so they quickly leave it alone and move on. I think it's just too cumbersome. It's too confusing, and you know, I think there's probably some expectations, false expectations, on behalf of some of our veterans that there's free money waiting for them out there, and in actuality, there's not. It's quite the opposite. So I think that's you know, why it's not getting used, Joe.
Yeah, aren't the loan limits quite low with that program?
I believe it's capped at 100. I may be wrong.
Yeah, and my suspicion is that $100,000 or less in a loan origination is not in the sweet spot for the bank.
No.
They're not making enough margin on a loan of that size to have to go through all of the rigmarole you have to go through for an SBA guaranteed loan to be processed.
Exactly, and they're going to that bank and that loan officer are going to go through the same work on that $75,000 loan that they would on a $600,000 loan. So it's just what's going to make them more money at the end of the day, and you're absolutely correct.
So the myth too, Ani, is a lot of people say, oh, it's easier for a veteran to get that type of loan, and from what you're saying, going through the same process or a similar process, that's a myth as well.
It is, because they have to put down a certain amount of cash, just like anybody else. They've got to hit the sweet spot for the credit rating and so on and so forth. So it really affords them nothing different than anybody else would get.
Well, certainly VetFran has been an unquestionable success for veterans and franchisors. Approximately how many veterans have benefited from the program?
I believe right now there's nearly 2,500. I think the last count was 2,300 or so at the IFA convention. It's nearing 2,500 veterans that have actually purchased franchises through that program. And right now we have, I believe, there's better than 400 franchisors participating in the program. So it's been highly successful. We'd like to see that number grow exponentially. We'd love to see that. I'd love to see that number double in the next few years. And hopefully with the PR and the momentum we have behind the program, that'll happen.
You mentioned approximately 400 franchisors. Is there any particular industry segment that is leading the pack?
I couldn't put my finger on one. There may be some assumptions that it would be the lower investment franchises that are probably gaining the most. But I'd have to be honest with you, I'd say that the franchisors that are working their program the most are the ones that are benefiting from it. And it's all over the boards. And working with veteran franchise centers, we put people into, that were buying multi-unit ice cream stores, very large investments of $300,000 to $500,000 each, and then all the way down to smaller service company brands that were $30,000 or $40,000 investments. But so they're really all over the board. But it's really the franchisor that's going to make a success out of their participation in VetFran or not. That's at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to.
Sure, and it comes down, like any franchise program, it has to do with how much they push it through, how much they commit to it, how much they're dedicated to it, how much they're passionate about it, how much they believe in it, and follow through. And as a keen observer and advocate of VetFran, what do you think the underpinnings are of a successful franchise program with respect to veterans and franchising?
I'm glad you asked me that question, Paul. And I'll tell you, I'm always amazed when I talk to franchisors or dealers or, people that are looking for owners of some kind, but mostly franchisors. I always ask them the question, do you have on your website during your normal process, when they submit for any information, do you ever have a place for them to check off if they're a veteran, or do you ask them if they're a veteran? And I'm always surprised how many of them say no. And I say, how many do you think that come through your normal process that just because you didn't ask them, you actually probably have more veterans in your system than you know about? And you probably be bringing on more veterans in your system just by doing that one simple little thing, right? So
that's
the question. Are you a veteran? Yes, I am. Wow. Let me tell you about what we've got going, right? And so it's all about how they work it into their recruiting process. It's all about working the channels to find those veterans, and then at the end of that, it's really about putting together a compelling program for that veteran. Something that they're not going to get, or that the average person off the street isn't going to get. And I work with a lot of companies. I get a lot of calls from franchisors about this, and I've been spending quite a bit of time working with brands to create a veteran program that is going to work for them, because a lot of them think, well, I'll just provide a discount of 10% on my franchise fee, and I join VetFran, and all of these leads will just automatically stream in. And you know what? It doesn't. There's another myth for franchisors there that if I'm a member of VetFran, I'm now going to sell to veterans. It doesn't happen that way. It's the same as joining the IFA and getting education without ever going to the conferences. You have to participate in the program. You have to make it work, and you have to incorporate it into your normal recruiting efforts. It's another tool to help you grow your brand. And on top of that, they have to do that with realistic goals and expectations and how many they want to put in, what their compelling offer is. And, just an example, I'll use U.S. Lawns. It's a great company based in Orlando. Ken Hutchison and Paul Wolverton and the boys over there are great friends of mine. Just an unbelievably strong brand, well-managed. They put together a program that I think is a hallmark of the way it should be done. And what they did is they said, just taken our franchise fee reduction or isn't enough. What they want to do is they went to their partners like Toro, John Deere, and others and said, we're starting this veteran program. What can you do for us? Well, at the end of the day, they put together a program that a veteran can walk into the front door of U.S. Lawns, and if they meet the qualifications, plunk down $5,000, and between U.S. Lawns and their partners like Toro, John Deere, Ford, et cetera, finance the rest of it. They don't even have to go to a bank. And they're able to get into a business that does commercial landscape management and earn, you know, $2, $3 million a year with that business. That's the kind of stuff that I'd like to see more franchisors doing. And so I always tell people, you know, don't just take, you know, it's wonderful. If you're given a discount off your franchise agreement, I you know, kudos to you. But what else can you be doing? Who else can you pull into this? You know, are there stakeholders, suppliers? Who else can we pull into this? So the more the better, because it helps grow your system. It's good for the veteran. The veteran's good for franchising. It helps on the financing side, and all parties win. All parties win.
Just to confirm one thing, did you say auto-magically or automatically?
Auto-magically.
Yeah, I love that word. That's a great word. I thought that's what you said.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're spot on with that. You know, Joe, we talk a lot throughout the week about systems and processes, and it seems like, you know, jumping into, you know, VetFran, like other things that are involved in franchising, that there needs to be a strategy, there needs to be a process, there needs to be a system. Lonnie brings up a good point of not even asking the question, are you a veteran? Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I do. Franchising, as you and Lonnie both know, is all about the details. And it's great having a program, it's great having an idea, and VetFran is no exception. But it's not a just add water kind of thing, along with the example that Lonnie gave about joining the IFA and figuring that you're going to get all this IFA knowledge and franchising knowledge through osmosis, but not actually attend anything and not have any connection with the information. I would say that a number of franchisors join the VetFran program in a very nominal way to say that they're being able to, that they're doing it, with the expectation, that's a false expectation, that the VetFran program itself is going to generate incremental franchise sales over and above the sales that they already get. So there's a reluctance by some, not all, franchisors to put the VetFran logo on their franchise website, make it part of a questionnaire, because they're figuring, well, I'm already getting these people to my website. Why do I want to give them a discount when I would have gotten them anyway? And that is penny wise and pound foolish.
Absolutely. It was exactly what I was thinking of when Lonnie mentioned that. And it's the fear or greed of not wanting to give up what they were promising to begin with. And if they already have the lead, they fall into that bad practice, and it is disappointing. Lonnie, what do you recommend franchisors do to get traction within the VetFran community?
Well, for starters, and this is something we've struggled with as a VetFran committee since its inception, is getting data from franchisors. You know, that's the next step for us with the program that the committee is pushing, is to really start working the numbers. You know, we say veterans are great, we're doing this many, yada, yada, but now we're ratcheting that up to say, here are the numbers, here are the statistics, here's where we're at. What we're struggling with, and I challenge every brand, every franchisor, every executive listening to this or will listen to this for the next year, to put somebody on your team that champions the program, that is responsible for that information. Because we can't, as a committee, make this program as successful as we want to without getting that feedback. And right now we're not getting the feedback from the brands that are participating in the program on the information we're looking for. So to get traction as you say, Paul, really take somebody in a company and say, this is a great program. Let's build a true recruiting effort around it. But many times, and this is no fault to the person that ends up with it on their lap, but it's looked at as strictly a marketing thing, or it's passed on to the person that's buying the advertising for the development team to say, hey, look into this VetFran thing, and you know, have the logo put up on our website, and that's as far as it goes. It takes that team; they need to build a program around it, a robust program that's incorporated into their normal recruiting techniques. And I like what Joe said; it isn't just an add water deal. It has to be done properly, and continue to work properly to work. And I'd really challenge everybody out there to work with us on the committee and help us get that information so that we can start building this even bigger and better.
You know, as part of the program, and talking with Dina Dwyer Owens about it, and I believe she mentioned it on the show a couple of weeks ago as well, about also recruiting veterans for employment opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Is that along the lines of your way of thinking as part of a program as well?
Absolutely. You know, we're committed, the committee and the VetFran members have committed, I believe, to 75,000 veterans or 80,000 veterans we'd like to see employed, whether that be franchisees or working for franchisees in franchising in the coming years. And, you know, there's been many brands that have made that commitment, and it's a huge movement right now for VetFran participating companies to not only participate and get veteran owners, but there's a bigger opportunity there to find great veterans with great attributes and great work ethic to work in those franchises. Those people can be incubated. They can be groomed and created a career path that ultimately may lead to franchise ownership at some point in their life. And that's a huge push for us right now, and we'd like to see more brands employing and getting their franchise owners in the field to employ more veterans. And I want to throw this out while we're on the call. We've got this really cool sticker that has been put together that says, I support VetFran, and all you need to do if they're a VetFran participant is call up the IFA and Beth Solomon, and she'll get you a bunch of stickers, and you can send them out, put them on all your store doors, our windows, and let people know that they're supporting the program.
Awesome. What final advice would you give franchisors when it comes to VetFran?
I'd have to say coming into it with the right expectations really is important. If they're going to come into this and do as we've discussed by just joining the program and, you know, hoping, you know, that a lead or two might come through the IFA VetFran portal and they don't work it, I think there's more harm to the program than done good by doing so. So if that's the attitude, then just don't participate at all. But if you're going to come into VetFran, come into it, or even if you're not an IFA member, because there's companies that will listen to this that are not IFA members, if you're going to recruit veterans, do it the right way. Put a compelling offer together. Train your recruiting people on how to work this program. It doesn't take a lot, but it takes a little bit of training and knowledge. Identify the profile of veteran you're looking for. Develop the channels that you're going to go market and recruit through, and then what you're going to do is bring them into that process, and then set some realistic goals and expectations. And no different than any other program, but if you're going to do it right. And that's I guess my final advice.
Excellent advice. And we're talking today, Franchise Today, with Lonnie Helgerson, talking about veterans and franchising. And as we move towards the end of the show, Lonnie, I'd like to touch on a new achievement in the works that are adding to your long list of accomplishments. Author of 5 Pennies, 10 Rules to Successfully Building a Franchise Mega Brand and Maximizing System Profits. Of course, is the name of your book. Congratulations. Where did the five pennies part of the title come from?
Well, that's a fun story to tell. Actually, revolves around a conversation I had with a very close friend of mine, Carolyn Bolton, who is the she's the director of special projects at Subway, and Carolyn serves on the International Institute for Franchise Education with me at Nova Southeastern University, and we've been friends for a long time. And every time we get together, we end up talking about our kids. And a year or two ago, I was telling her, you know, that my son Chandler is always hitting me up for money, just like kids do. And I started making him create an invoice. When he cleaned my office, I'd pay him $5 and I'd make him, you know, create an invoice. And so I was teaching him some business skills and how you make money and how you invoice and you collect it and so on and so forth. And she was chuckling, and she was telling me about her son Matthew. And at the time, he was probably 8 or 9 years old. And Matthew would hit her up every time they'd go out, because at the time she was working for Franchise Brands, which is a company that is owned in part by Fred DeLuca and his other partner to acquire franchise chains. And she was working in that company at that time. And Matthew would hit her up every time they'd go to a bagel shop or some other place, and it was usually food that he liked, right? He'd say, "Mom, you guys got to buy this company. You got to buy this company." And after a while, she got points. Says, "I got to teach this kid how we evaluate things, right? He's driving her crazy." So she said, "Here's the deal." Says, "If you think about every dollar that comes into this store, okay, is 100 pennies. So many of those pennies are going to go for rent to keep your building." So many pennies go for your utilities, keep lights on and so forth. So many pennies go to buy food for resale. So many pennies go to labor. And she went through all that. And at the bottom, you know, towards the bottom, there's, you know, typically 5 pennies that go to the franchisor, which are the royalty, average royalty. And then there's should be a whole bunch of pennies left at the bottom for the franchisee to put in his pocket. That's how he makes money. And that's the number that we're looking for, is the franchisee's profitability. And I told her, I said, "You know, Carol," I said, "that's a fantastic approach to it." And I said, "My concern is," and this is back in, this is like 07 or 08, I guess, because it was, you know, high-flying times. And I said, "You know, I'm afraid that too many franchisors have forgotten about those 5 pennies and that profitability." And because, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, that if, you know, those 5 pennies and that profitability need to be protected at all costs, because if the franchisee is not making any money, there's really no need for the franchisor. And so that's the premise of the book, and that's where the title Five Pennies came from.
That's awesome. I'm going to start charging my kids 5 cents of every dollar they make for having our last name.
There you go, see?
When will the book be in print, how much, and where do folks buy it?
Right now I'm taking pre-orders on my website, HelgersonFranchiseGroup.com, and I'm selling both hardcover and a paperback. And the hardcover I think is for like 24-something, and the paperback's a little less. I can't recall the price right off the top of my head, but looking to have the book published here in the next few months, literally. I'm talking to some potential major players for publishing it. That are well-known in franchising and entrepreneur communities. And so I'm waiting to hear back and word with that and how things are going. And so I'm hoping to have this thing finally put together and done in the next few months and take it to market. And right now I've had a tremendous amount of response for pre-orders. I used crowdfunding to raise a little money for it, and at the same time I pre-sold a tremendous amount of books off of it. And the feedback I'm getting from the franchise community has just been absolutely overwhelming. It's just been a really interesting ride.
Well, very good. Lonnie, wish you the best of luck with it. I appreciate you being a guest today on Franchise State. Joe, we got 60 seconds. Anything for a wrap-up from you?
No, I want my 5 pennies for today's show.
HelgersonFranchiseGroup.com.
we'll send you 5 pennies in the mail, Joe.
There you go.
Next week, March 8th at 11 o'clock a.m., Catherine Monson from Fast Signs will be on Franchise Today talking about international franchising. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.